Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. Love, you got the power,
but you just don't understand. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this hour. This is an empowerment hour. We're going to talk about how everyday mindfulness will impact your glucose level. Now, just consider that we now have one half of all adults in the United States who have diabetes or prediabetes. It's outpacing cancer and heart disease combined. Brown University is going to give us the latest on that. Also today, we're going to look at cacao extract, that's your chocolate, may protect your skin from wrinkles. Seoul National University, South Korea, did the research. And also, there's a natural alternative that they claim is 10,000 times more effective than chemotherapy from the Alliance for Natural Health. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal PLOS. So what is this natural ingredient that could be so important in helping people with cancer? Also, we're going to examine vitamin K, improving glucose metabolism and insulin sensitivity from the Institute of Science and Technology in India. And if you are a cyclist and you want to perform better, longer, faster, according to Kitasato University in Japan, there's a single amino acid that can do that. I'll tell you what that is. Also today, we're going to have some really interesting feedback. We're going to talk about private versus public morality, Robert Reich. We're going to look at preserving medical freedom of choice for physicians and their informed patients, Dr. Paul Thomas, medical doctor, on vaccines linked to autism. And if more parents knew about this prior to vaccinating, I'm sure a certain percentage would say no. You don't have the science on your side to prove safety and efficacy. I will not put my child at risk. Keep in mind, today you have so many people who are considered anti-vaccine because they were all pro-vaccine. Every one of these anti-vaccines have experienced the devastating impact of a vaccine on their children. You've heard about the difficulty of the water condition in Flint, Michigan. By the way, it's all over the United States, not just Flint. This is a very short clip of a woman talking about what it's like when you have to deal with water that you cannot drink and yet you're being charged for. And if you don't pay the bill, they take away your house. Also today, corruption is legal in America. The stuff you learned about government as a kid is completely wrong. A commentary today from Professor Henry Giroux, America's Addiction to Violence. Also, just give you one example of how biased the media is. If you ask the average person who has learned anything about Syria, you'll be told that the Syrian government of Assad chemically attacked his own people. Not true. That he is a tyrant that suppresses all freedoms in his country. Again, not true. So how do we get to where we demonize the person and then destroy their country? Stephen Kinzer of the Boston Globe, the media are misleading the public on Syria. Also, time permitting today, this is from RT, thanks for destroying our country. Angry Libyans lash out at Obama's independence. Congratulations. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. First up, we know that we should be eating better. That's not a mystery. Even those who continue to eat poorly still know that. But that doesn't mean that we're learning the lessons and making changes. In fact, every current study shows that where on the one hand there is a growing desire for more organic, locally grown food, hence the boom in farmers markets. And farmers markets are really taking off. I just went to one this past weekend, and I saw at least 100 unique stalls. One of them had all these different types of organic bagels on little sticks that you could slick which one you wanted. Locally made, there was a table with sauerkraut and pickles. Another one had olives and olive oils. Another one had organic, non-chemical made soaps. And another had essential oils. So it's gone way beyond just produce now. But we don't even have enough produce to supply the needs of people who want it. So on the one hand, we have more people who are saying yes to organic and no to GMOs. And yet that group of people is not that large. It's maybe today, I'm guessing around 10%. Still, 10% is a lot of people. You're dealing with about 31 million people. And that's very good. So I'm very pleased about that. But on the other hand, we're also consuming more junk food than ever before. Lots of it. Hamburgers, hot dogs, french fries, pizzas, the general fare. And we've institutionalized it, where people believe that you're eating the right way if you eat the junk food every day. And so breaking that habit is not easy for most people, because it also means they have to change how they socialize. Could you imagine going to watch a football game with friends or any athletic event and saying you want a fresh juice or you want a healthy meal? But it can be done. And I'm going to advocate that there be more social networking where the theme is health. So everyone coming is coming because they want to participate in something healthy with health-minded people. And then find the people that you find you're compatible with. It's a way of starting new friendships. And I think it's a very good idea. Now, for those who are interested in health, there's a new study out that shows that drinking certain kinds of tea pose dangerous health risks. Next to water, tea is the most popular beverage in the world. Now, that's a good thing for most of it. But it's also meaning that you have to pay attention to the type of tea that you're consuming. Why? Because if you don't know that it's organic, and you don't know that it says that it's been tested or checked for different toxins, then you can end up with a tea that can be very toxic for you. For example, there are heavy metals in certain teas. The Journal of Toxicology, researchers tested teas and found that many had high levels of lead, and that can cause heart, kidney, and reproductive problems. And so I would suggest the following. Don't buy anything with fluoride. Make sure your tea has been checked for heavy metals like cadmium and lead and aluminum. And then make sure that you're getting organic and that there's literature shows that the people who manufactured that tea did so in a very conscientious way. So you can get really good teas that are terrific for us, or you can get teas that are adulterated. And that's important. From Brown University, there's a study showing that just everyday mindfulness is the inherent trait of being aware of your present thoughts and feelings. In a study of almost 400 people that measured health indicators, including dispositional mindfulness and blood glucose, they found those that scored the best were those people who were most mindful. Now, why is it important to be mindful? Because if you're mindful, you'll think, well, I may be hungry, but do I want to have that snack that's a sugar snack, a refined carbohydrate, a cracker or something, or a donut? And the answer is no. Your mindfulness would tell you, I don't want my blood sugar to spike. I don't want the acrylamides. Mindfulness would mean, yes, I want a snack. Why not have something healthy as a snack? Instead of having coffee, have a juice. So this showed from Brown University, the more mindful you are, the choices you make, the better your glucose levels. From Seoul National University in South Korea, cacao, that's C-A-C-A-O, it's where you get your chocolate. And they found that a daily supplement with the extract can reduce ultraviolet-induced skin damage and protect against wrinkles. That's good, and that was published in the Journal of Investigative Dermatology. So 2 ounces a day is what I would suggest, and that could help your skin. Now, this I found particularly interesting. I cannot independently verify this number, but it's worth looking at. It's in the journal PLOS, and which is a major scientific journal, and it found that a substance found in ginger called 6-shogaol, that's S-H-O-G-A-O-L, is a potent agent in fighting breast cancer, much more potent than chemotherapy, but you don't have that danger. Shogaol, from the Japanese word ginger, or shoga, is special because it doesn't merely target cancer cells in general, but cancer stem cells that are responsible for the growth of tumors. Now, these cancer stem cells, while few in number, can self-renew, split off, and create new tumors, and are resistant to chemotherapy treatments more often than not. Sarah G., writing in Green Med Info, noted that one of the reasons this finding is so significant is that while conventional techniques such as chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation can and do reduce the size of tumors, they often fail to address the root of the problem, the cancer stem cells, not to mention the toll conventional treatments takes on the body. If the mother cells are not eliminated, tumors grow back. Sarah G. makes another astute observation based upon the study's findings. Natural substances like ginger, curcumin, and green tea have been time-tested as acceptable to the human body in the largest, longest-running clinical trials known. Tens of thousands of years of direct human experience spanning thousands of different cultures around the world that constitute human prehistory. And as with so many other natural alternatives to conventional remedies, for example, silver, colloidal silver versus antibiotics, vitamin D versus the flu vaccine, safer, cheaper, and more effective treatments are rejected by establishment in favor of patented drugs that make lots of money for the companies that create them. But the natural substances should not be overlooked. And finally, from the Institute of Science and Technology in India, vitamin K supplements can improve glucose metabolism and insulin sensitivity. You want to have insulin sensitivity. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition. Quote, supplements of vitamin K1 and 2 may help reduce the risk of diabetes by improving insulin sensitivity and glucose metabolism. So that's good news. Now, it's very easy to get vitamin K1 and K2. It's inexpensive. You get 1-2 milligrams. That's all you need. And one other thing, I wanted to help the cyclists in this audience. From Seto University in Japan, supplementing with amino acid, L-citrulline, can reduce time trial competition times by 10 seconds. That's a lot. By the way, citrulline, citrulline is an amino acid. And so it's good, and it increases the role of nitric oxide and metabolism. It's converted to L-arginine in the body to support L-arginine and nitric oxide levels. And so it promotes vascular dilation, which improves oxygen and blood circulation through the body. And this is published in the Journal of International Society of Sports Nutrition. So that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break, come back, because we have so much to put into today's show. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us today. And for those who are listening over the telephone, We appreciate you taking the time. You can listen every day at noon Eastern Time over the phone anywhere in North America, in fact, South America and Canada. I want to share some insights about the nature of violence. For those who are not violent, for those who don't think in ways that would cause violence, good for you, because you're not the problem. The problem is when, as a larger society, people fill the voids in their lives with something that will stimulate them. And violence stimulates attention. It creates an adrenaline rush. Even rides that are risky. It no longer, you know, is jumping out of an airplane with a parachute. You have to jump off the side of a giant cliff and with a bodysuit on and wing your way at very, very serious speeds. Many have died this way. But then suddenly people get the rush. Well, what happens when you become addicted to the rush? Then doing the same thing won't give you the same feedback loop. So you got to get something even more dangerous. And Henry Giroux has addressed this. And I see it all the time. I see the nature of violence in dialoguing. I see how emotional violence plays out, not just physical violence. After all, when you have an argument with someone, you don't say something that compliments them. More often than not, you'll say something that tries to disempower them, to disfigure the image they have themselves or others so that you leave a person distorted, confused, out of emotional and spiritual balance. That's violence. And especially if you do it repeatedly, if it becomes a technique that in the initial sense you win by, because the person who is most aggressive and most dominant becomes the person that controls through the fear of violence, even the fear of confrontation. But we all know that violence runs through American society like electric current offering instant pleasure from all sources of the culture, whether it be the nightly news and Hollywood fanfare or television series that glorify serial killings. At the policy level, violence drives an arms industry, a militaristic foreign policy, and increasingly that drives massive amounts of weapons getting around the world into the hands of people, especially in the Middle East, especially Saudi Arabia, where they shouldn't have any of that. But it does. And that then can contribute to their local fights. And also, the United States is utterly wedded to a neoliberal culture in which cruelty is viewed as virtue. Mass incarceration, the default welfare program and chief mechanism to institutionalize obedience. Wasn't it Hillary Clinton who recently, it was shown, she said, we have to bring these young black inner city kids to heel? No, you bring a dog to heel. You don't bring, and you don't even do that if you know how to take care of a dog. Because what you're doing, you're creating fear in the dog. So you really think you're going to bring a society to heal? I didn't hear anyone saying that we should go up to Connecticut to a white, upper, middle-class, affluent suburb and say, bring these white, affluent kids, many of whom's parents are hedge fund owners in equity partnership, let's bring them to heal. See how that would go down. It wouldn't. And yet, we worship institutionalized obedience. That's our prison system. At the same time, a shark-like mode of competition replaces any viable notion of solidarity. And sabotaging notion, self-interest pushes society into the false lure of mass consumerism. If you're really upset, if you're really stressed, if you're really out of control with something in your life, shop. Shop online. A little story. I once was invited on to the Home Shopping Network and QVC to offer a book I had, which was a national bestseller. So I went. I'd never been there before. And it was so successful, I was told by the people who were arranging this down there, that it was the most books ever sold in 18 minutes in the company's history. So I was invited back several times. And to give you an idea, you can sell more books if you're successful on QVC in 18 minutes than the average author would sell in 5 years in bookstores. That's the power of that medium. So I was asked, would I stay overnight? And about every 2 hours or 3 hours, they would have me on again. Okay, not a big deal. What I found interesting is that here it is like 3 o'clock in the morning, and the phones are ringing, and I'm thinking, who's up at this hour watching, you know, a television program where the whole purpose is for you to buy something? And then I talk with a fella who was taking some calls, and I said, is this normal? Oh, yeah, this is normal. And I said, are you really offering anything that's that interesting or that needed by people? No, no. He says, we'll get a lot of this stuff back. He said, in fact, people will call until they get someone whose voice is familiar to them, and then they'll want to talk with you. Now, there's only so much time you can spend because we're monitored how long, you know, we take to make a call. But it's just that friendly voice on the other end of a lonely person that makes them feel good. And sometimes they don't even open up the boxes when they get it. They just return it within 30 days and get a refund and start cycle all over. Now, that's not everybody, but that's certainly some. And he wasn't the only person that would tell me that. I had many other people tell me. And it shows you what happens in a society where we don't know how to socialize if we are not a part of a group, a clique, a club, a sorority, a fraternity, a guild. Our rituals of day-to-day living are different. Think of all the people who are just shy. Think of the people who have wonderful insights, are great human beings, but rare will be the person that experiences that because they don't want to make themselves vulnerable. They don't want to be rejected. You can bet somewhere in their background they were rejected. So here we have a society that we do not understand human nature, but we tell people, if you don't understand yourself, you're having problems, shop. Spend money. Money you probably don't have for things you're never going to need or use, and to create debt that's going to stress you even more. Well, how exactly is that supposed to turn out? So all these forces point to modes of authoritarianism and registers of state violence and an increasing number of mass shootings and that are symptomatic of a society engaged in racism, fear, militarism, bigotry, and massive inequality in wealth and power. And here's where that connects to what I just said. Think how many people have no wealth, have no power. So maybe the only power they will experience is that of speaking with someone on telephone and ordering something. There was a report that I read yesterday of a person in England, it was in the Guardian newspaper, who told the truth that the person he was dating really wasn't his date, but he had all these pictures up there, and this is a new phenomena where you connect with someone that you're not really connected to, and you talk about dating, and you have this entirely fictional dialogue going on. Well, why? Well, because it makes you seem more interesting. In his case, it said so his mom would stop saying, you know, you should be married, and he could say, well, I'm dating. Here's her picture. Here's what we talk about. But it goes beyond that. There's an awful lot of people who do not know how to relate in the real world to real people and share the best of themselves. So they create this entire fiction online. That's the so-called League of Friends on the internet. And yet we won't recognize it. We are a society that is degenerating. We are degenerating because on the home front, civil society is becoming a military organization, a space of lawlessness and warlike practices organized primarily for the production of violence. For instance, the police now use their discourse of command and power to criminalize behavior. In addition, they use military weapons and surveillance tools as if they're preparing for war and create a culture of fear in which militaristic principles replace legal principles. Here's what one person wrote on this. There is an institutional insecurity that seeks to cover itself through social control, for which individual interactions with the police are the means. Indeed, with their command positions over people, the cops act out this insecurity by criminalizing individuals in advance. No legal principle need be involved. There is only the militaristic principle. When the pregnant woman steps away from the cop, she is breaking the law. To force her to ground and handcuff her is far from anything intended by the principle of due process in the Constitution. The Constitution provided for law enforcement, but not for police impunity. When police shoot a fleeing suspect and claim they are acting in self-defense, that they felt threatened, it is not their person, but the command and control principle that is threatened. To defend that command and control through assault or murderous actions against a disobedient person implies that the cop's own identity is wholly immersed into its paradigm. There is nothing psychological about this. Self-worth or insecurity is not the issue. There is only the military ethic of power imposed on civil society through an assumption of impunity. It is the ethos of democracy, of human self-respect, that is the threat. Well, violence feeds on corporate-controlled disinformation machines that celebrate it as a sport while upping the pleasure quotient for the public. Americans do not merely engage in violence, they are entertained by it. This kind of toxic rationality and lure of violence is mimicked in America's aggressive foreign policies, in the sanctions of state torture, and in the gruesome killings of civilians by drones. In conclusion, the U.S. government's warfare state is propelled by a military-industrial complex that cannot spend enough on weapons of death and destruction. Super-modern planes such as the F-35 Strike Force Fighter cost $220 million per plane and still are plagued by mechanical problems and yet are supported by a military and defense establishment and all the legislators, all the people running for office. Oh yeah, give more to the military. Why? You're already giving the military more than all the other government programs combined. And there's no one out there that we have to fear. No one has more of anything than we have. And yet that discussion is never had. As Gabriel Kolka observes, such warlike investments reflect a pathology and culture that is expressed in spending more money regardless of how it contributes to running up the debt, and for that matter, thrives on the energies of the dead. That said, let me share this also. This is short. Thanks for destroying our country. Angry Libyans lash out at Obama's independence congratulations. In a message to the Libyan people, the U.S. president said that the 2011 Libyan revolution liberated them from, quote, 42 years of dictatorship. Now there is, quote, a profound changes which the Libyan people have, quote, demonstrated the commitment to resolve. What does that mean? Barack Obama welcomed the endorsement of the Libyan political agreement signed on December 17th and expressed confidence that with political dialogue and the establishment of government of national accord, peace and prosperity and security would come. It didn't come in Afghanistan, it didn't come in Iraq, and it's not going to come in Libya. And Obama just admitted there was some accountability for not being swift enough and underestimating the need to rebuild the government. No, you have to rebuild the entire country. And how are you going to do that? How are you going to take the once most prosperous nation, the best healthcare system, the best educational system, more freedom than any other country in Africa, and you destroyed it? Obama, you destroyed it. And, of course, others supported that, including Hillary Clinton. So why don't you go to Libya, go to all the hundreds of villages and ask them, hey, how did that liberation thing go for you? You don't have drinking water, you don't have electricity, you don't have any security, you're run by mobs and by gangs and militias. No rule of order, none. But you got to admit, we got rid of the only impediment to making sure that foreign corporations come in here and exploit your oil, exploit your gold, exploit your water. So it wasn't all bad. It's mind-numbing how the average person does not want to look for the facts and looks no deeper than what they're told by the New York Times. And if there's one thing I would never do, is believe without challenge anything on foreign or domestic politics by the New York Times. But there is someone who is telling the truth. And thus far, the only person who I've seen from a national publication, the Boston Globe. By the way, the Boston Globe is someone who gave us a spotlight and exposed the Catholic Church and the fact that it was an entire culture of sexual abuse and covering up for those people clear up to the Pope. And they had the courage to do it. And if you haven't seen Spotlight the movie, I recommend it highly. This is from Stephen Kinzer of the Boston Globe. Quote, coverage of the Syrian war will be remembered as one of the most shameful episodes in the history of American press. Reporting about carnage in the ancient city of Aleppo is the latest reason why. For 3 years, violent militants have run Aleppo. Their rule began with a wave of repression. They posted notices warning residents, quote, don't send your children to school. If you do, you will get the backpack, and we will get the backpack, and you will get the coffin. Then they destroyed factories, hoping that unemployed workers would have no recourse other than become fighters. They truck-looted machinery to Turkey and sold it. This month, people in Aleppo have finally seen glimmers of hope. The Syrian army and its allies, that would be Russia and Iran, have been pushing militants out of the city. Last week, they reclaimed the main power plant. Regular electricity may soon be restored. The militants hold on in the city, but that could be ending. Militants, true to form, are wreaking havoc as they are pushed out of the city by Russian and Syrian armed forces. Quote, Turkish-Saudi-backed moderate rebels showered the residential neighborhoods of Aleppo with unguided rockets and gas jars, end quote, one Aleppo resident wrote on social media. The Beirut-based analyst Marwa Osma asked, quote, the Syrian Arab army, which is led by President Bashar Assad, is the only force on the ground, along with their allies, who are fighting ISIS. So you want to weaken the only system that is fighting ISIS? End quote. This does not fit with Washington's narrative. As a result, much of the American press is reporting the opposite of what is actually happening. Many news reports suggest that Aleppo has been liberated for 3 years, but is now being pulled back into misery. Americans are being told that the virtuous course in Syria is to fight the Assad regime and its Russian and Iranian partners. We are supposed to hope that a righteous coalition of Americans, Turks, Saudis, Kurds, and moderate opposition will win. This is convoluted nonsense, but Americans cannot be blamed for believing it. We have almost no real information about the combatants, their goals, or their tactics. Much blame for this lies with our media. Under intense financial pressure, most American newspapers, magazines, and broadcast networks have drastically reduced their core of foreign correspondents. Much important news about the world now comes from reporters based in Washington. In that environment, access and credibility depend upon acceptance of official paradigms. Reporters who cover Syria check with the Pentagon, the State Department, the White House, and think tank so-called experts. After a spin on the soiled carousel, they feel they have covered all sides of the story. This form of stenography produces the pablum that passes for news about Syria, end quote. So that's just to show that the American media cannot be trusted. The government cannot be trusted. Politicians, with rare exception, cannot be trusted. And so how do you get the news that you can rely upon? How do you check the veracity of claims to see what is right or not, in part or whole? I'd like your feedback on this. We're going to open up our talkback line, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888, about America becoming a nation of violence. Now, mind you, as many Americans are engaged in violence in sports and entertainment, and also they watch a beating, a killing, not because they're outraged and want to take that outrage to a public forum, a protest, but because it's a form of entertainment. I saw this in the Vietnam War, where people didn't turn on the television at night because they were post the war. They weren't. They turned it on because it was like John Wayne and the Sands of Iwo Jima. It was just it was entertainment for many until their daughters and sons came back in black bags or in pieces. Then it became personal. What will it take for the American psyche to change from violent to nonviolent, from warlike to peacemaking? Your thoughts. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm on the road. When I come back, I'll be premiering 4 new films, 2 new books, and I'll be doing a series of lectures and book signings and a dance, probably in the month of June. Now I want you to hear a short piece by Professor Robert Reich, that's R-E-I-C-H, on public and private morality.
Some politicians have morality upside down. They're barnstorming across the land, condemning gay marriage, abortion, out-of-wedlock births, access to contraception, and the walls separating church and state. But America's problem is not a breakdown in private morality. It's a breakdown in public morality. What Americans do in their bedrooms is their own business. But what corporate executives and Wall Street financiers have been doing in boardrooms and executive suites affect all of us. Defrauding investors and homeowners, looting companies, taking exorbitant pay, treating ordinary workers like garbage, hiding their wealth abroad, using political clout to get tax loopholes, and bribing public officials with hundreds of thousands of dollars of so-called campaign donations. Some people call the private moral decisions they disagree with shameful. Rush Limbaugh calls a young woman a slut just for standing up for her beliefs about private morality. But the abuses of public trust, such as we've witnessed on Wall Street and in the executive suites of our largest corporations, are violations of public morality, and they are truly shameful. They undermine the integrity of our economy and democracy. They've led millions of Americans to conclude the game is rigged. Twice before, progressives have saved capitalism from its own excesses by appealing to public morality and common sense. First, in the early 1900s, when the captains of industry monopolized the economy into giant trusts and forced people to work 12-hour days in sweatshop conditions. In response, we enacted antitrust laws and labor protections. And then again in the 1930s, after the stock market collapsed and 1 out of 4 Americans was unemployed, we regulated banks and insured deposits. We cleaned up the stock market and provided social insurance to the destitute. It's time for us to condemn the abuses of economic power and privilege that characterize this new Gilded Age and base a new era of reform on public morality and common sense.
And that was Robert Reich. Also, I want you to hear something that I think is important, and that is, I believe that we are not told the truth on vaccines ever, because once you open that thread about a DPT vaccine or an MMR vaccine or hepatitis vaccine or a flu vaccine, then you open it up completely. Then you can't hide the fact that you don't have legitimate independent science on your side. You've been lying to the public in the biggest medical health scandal in history. And you've caused thousands of deaths and hundreds of thousands of injuries affecting millions of parents and people. This is Dr. Paul Thomas, medical doctor, on Preserving Medical Freedom. But by the way, before we go to Dr. Paul Thomas, let's say hello to Kerwin from Alabama. Hi, Kerwin. Oh, no, I was told he just hung up. If you want to call back, we'll take your call, Kerwin. Now let's go to Dr. Paul Thomas, and I'm still going to take calls on the issue of why America is so violent, what we have to do to change course in our worship of violent acts, including the athletes who do these stupid, you know, showboat dances in the end zone. You know, if you complete a task, good. You know, you completed the task. You don't have to then mock it. Everything today is an excessive exaggeration, and we adapt to it, and then we expect it when it's actually embarrassing. So give us a call at 888-874-4888 if you'd like to give us feedback and comment on why America is the most violent country in the world. Now, Dr. Paul Thomas.
Hi, Oregonians. It's Dr. Paul. I'm about to go in and testify to the Oregon Senate Health Committee on Senate Bill 442, Amendment 3, which will remove your rights to get a philosophical or a religious exemption on vaccines. We are going to be, folks, mandated to do whatever the state wants. And, of course, it's going to be all vaccines for all kids at all times. And you'll only be able to get a medical exemption from certain pre-selected medical providers. This is a travesty. I hope you'll come in and follow the rest of this testimony, because this is powerful, this is important, and this is for our children, folks. We need to protect our children and preserve the right for freedom of choice and the right to give informed consent when your child's about to get a vaccine. Isn't that what it's all about for doctors anyway? You're supposed to give the pros, the cons, the alternatives. One of the alternatives when it comes to vaccines is doing nothing. Follow me in. So, you know, when you stand in a great hall, our state house, it feels important. And, you know, our freedoms and our rights as citizens are supposed to be guarded right here. We're exercising our rights as citizens, and we're going to hope that democracy works, because this Senate committee has a big decision. They have a very misguided bill that will take away our rights, and so hopefully they'll listen. Madam Chair and Senators, I'm Dr. Paul Thomas, pediatrician board certified for Portland, Oregon. I represent 11,000 patients and about 500 new babies each month who come to my practice wanting informed consent about vaccines. It turns out, as a physician, it is my responsibility to give the risks, the benefits, and the alternatives of any medical procedure. We are not going to be allowed to do this if this bill passes the way it's written. And that's a tragedy, because then you might as well eliminate us, the physicians. We are of no value. I'd like you to imagine something. You're about to go into the hospital to have a baby. Maybe it's your daughter's child, so it's your baby or your grandbaby. You sign in to give permission for routine care. That baby's delivered, and within minutes, they get the hepatitis B vaccine and the vitamin K and the iron. Did you know that hepatitis B vaccine contains 250 micrograms of aluminum? That is 10 to 15 times the maximum allowable dose for an infant. You've got the studies in your packet that show brain damage, autism association, and the challenge to the immune system. What makes it worse is the only people that need that vaccine are moms who are positive for Hep B. In Oregon and in this country, that's less than 1%. So we're going to poison the other 99%, and it's going to be mandated by this law so that we cover that 1%. And our OBGYNs are doing a masterful job. We know who needs the vaccine and who doesn't. What makes this tragic is we now have data that's in your package that shows that this policy is not giving lasting immunity. So 15 to 20-year-olds do not have protection anymore when they become sexually active or have IV drug use. We need to change that policy. The JAMA article in February of 2013 in your packet, in Norway, 85,000 pregnancies followed for 6 years. They looked at the autism rate and folate intake. It was 1 in 1,000. The rate here in the United States at the same time was 1 in 100. I was curious, what's the difference? Guess what? They don't give the hepatitis B to newborns who don't need it. Huge difference. In my practice, I now have 1,000 kids who are at least 3 years old, no new autism. At the rate of 1 in 50 that my peers are experiencing, I should have had 20 cases. 4 million births a year in the United States at a rate of 50, 1 in 50, we have 80,000 cases of autism a year, and it could be reduced by 76,000 by a couple simple measures. Now, you've heard that, oh, it's the MMR is causing the autism and all of that. It's true. The pediatrics article that was quoted in 2004 as showing no link is the very study that had the link The data was excluded, 300% increase in African-American boys. So the studies are not final. The AAP, my own academy, and the CDC are saying science finished. No, that's not how science works. Science is a process, and the process is unfolding. We need the studies. Look at the group who haven't been vaccinated, the group who are selectively vaccinated, and those who are fully vaccinated, and see what happens. I have a cohort of selectively vaccinated. They all get their DTaP. We're not putting any of these immunocompromised people at risk for pertussis. They're all getting the MMR eventually. Herd immunity is there. We don't need this bill the way it's written. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming. I'm going to jump to Mary Alionis.
Well, I gave it my best shot, folks. I would encourage you to speak out because, you know, our senators sometimes do listen. Many of us spoke today in front of the Senate committee.
They only listen if they fear being challenged in elections. By the way, he is a pro-vaccine advocate, but you heard what he says. He has not had a case of autism in the last 3 years. And out of 3,000 children, he should have had autism because he did not recommend those early vaccines. Now, I have sent Dr. Thomas 37 articles, all fully footnoted, all scholarly articles, published by myself and our scholar in residence, Richard Gale, and hopefully he will read these articles and realize he has to even go deeper, and then he wouldn't be giving the MMR at all. Let's say hello. We have Brian from Toronto. We have Kerwin back on again from Alabama. Kerwin, you're first. Your thoughts, please.
How you doing, Gary? I'm calling about your situation about the violence, and but it's an unfortunate situation. I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but I believe that people are too far gone with this violence. It's ingrained in their system. They think that that's the only way that they can solve situations. Now, on the other hand, okay, we can refrain from it, you know, by showing, because you can talk to people all day long, but they're not going to listen to what you're saying because it's like a drug. We love the violence so much, but however, we can show in our actions that violence is nothing but destruction, and therefore we don't have to adhere to violence because that's someone else's reality who created that. And people are afraid to create their own realities, that they don't have to be involved in these situations. They don't have to adhere to them. Turn off the violent shows, the violent entertainment. You don't really have to deal with that. You only deal with that because others have said that this is the way to be, this is the way society is, this is the best way to get ahead. I don't want to keep you too long, but the only way I think that it's going to happen is that we have to start with a generation of children right now, 2, 3, and 4 years old, all the way up until they're teenagers, and try to infuse in them that, you know, nonviolence. I'm talking about the only way to have violence is, of course, if someone's trying to hurt you, you have to defend yourself. But violence is not the way to go, and this society is meant. I hate to be pessimistic because I'm an optimistic person, but these grown-ups and everybody are too ingrained in it, and in some way, the only way I can be to stop it. We have to show them by our actions, and then maybe that way it can change something.
Very well said, Kerwin. Thank you. I appreciate that. Let me give a takeaway from Martin Luther King Jr. He said, nonviolence is a powerful and just weapon. It is a weapon unique in history, which cuts without wounding and ennobles the man who wields it. It is a sword that heals. Today, violence is the rhetoric of the period. Thank you for your call. Now let's also go over and say hello to Brian from Toronto, Canada. Hi, Brian.
How are you this morning?
Good, thank you.
Excellent, excellent show as always. In terms of violence, I think in some ways starts with our children. All the books they read, all the TV shows they watch, all the movies they watch. What's the hero? The hero's the guy on his own fighting overwhelming odds, slaughtering and murdering the bad guys. So our heroes are killers. And that's not a way to raise children. I think that certainly, you know, has some involvement in this.
I believe you're absolutely correct. Brian, when I'm assuming you're a baby boomer.
Yeah. I consider myself
I'm just making a statement based upon your age.
Yes.
Because there was a time when we baby boomers, I'm a baby boomer, when we were growing up, our heroes were Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Paul Horning, Jerry West, Hot Rod Hunley. We had heroes that exemplified the capacity to achieve what many considered almost impossible with great skill and determination, but still maintain a sense of austerity of soul. So they were never pretentious. They never lived outside of their communities. When people used to go to watch the Brooklyn Dodgers, that star, Jackie Robinson, would go right back into the neighborhood and go to the brownstone and hang out with his neighbors. All that has changed. And as a result, who the children worship today, who they are guided by, is got to be more a focus upon finding the models that show us how good a human being can be at doing something. And it's okay to overcome odds. Ralph Nader, in my opinion, is a hero. And look at what he was able to do. Rachel Carson is a hero. Rosa Parks is a hero. We have adequate heroes today that have been at the center of firestorms, but never compromised on their virtues. They did not have to hurt another human being to make their point. I appreciate your insight. Thank you very much, Brian, for calling it. It took a year to do, but we finally accomplished it. We have set up a server that's up on GaryNall.com and my Facebook, where let's say you call in and you'd like one of the products that I create. And it used to be I had over 300 products, but probably 80% of them were not unique. They were just, you know, a B complex to accommodate people who want a B complex. I've stopped all that. I'm only putting products up that I've personally created that maintain my standards, green stuff, red stuff, berry blast, some new ones like nut and stuff that people are loving because you're getting all the seeds and nuts. And I've got four more coming out in the near future. So what I've done is so people still have the other products like a zinc or a coenzyme Q10 or something else, I have personally selected hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of products, enzyme products and probiotic products and beauty care products, all these other products from the best manufacturers, and you can now order them. You can either go up directly online and get them, or you can call our order number and speak with either Diane or Bill or Mila, and they'll guide you through. You tell them what you want, and they'll show you the whole selection and at phenomenal prices, because I wanted us to be so competitive that people would say, yeah, we don't have to go there. We can go there because we're getting best price. So you're getting a huge variety of products. But I personally selected what I consider the best quality and call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Now you have probably closing on 1,000 products you can select from, in addition to, let's say, the 40 that I personally created. This way you can get them one-stop shopping. Have a nice day, everyone.